So, can I interest you in Hanukkah? Having talked Fred into that duet, you know I'm going to give it my best shot. Because despite the many ways we can and should have fun with Hanukkah, it is really about a lot more than oil that burned quite slowly. In fact, Hanukkah was a lot about issues and themes that we are struggling again with right now and right here. Identity, changing definitions of cultures and creeds, nationalism, imperialism, schisms isolating and inciting people and nations. Those scourges are all active among us in our country. And they are widespread across our world, especially right now, in the wake of days of rage. We, along with Israel and Palestine, Gaza and the West Bank, and many other nations responding to the president's declarations regarding Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. We can't hear or think about the Hanukkah story right now without thinking about all the threat and emotion and lives and warfare that are as alive again now as they were then. We need history to understand our present, to understand all that is new and unprecedented, and all that is old and echoing. The Hanukkah story starts generally, gotta roll up my sleeves for this, with Alexander the Great, who united many countries from Greece as far east as India, as far south as Egypt, into his great empire. And Alexander's MO was that he would conquer a country, but allow it to retain its traditions as long as they hailed him king and worshipped him as a god king, which he was first informed in Egypt that he was, and then incorporate the Greek polis, the city-state structure and cultural ways into the conquered nation's organization. That was what he required. He didn't require them to change everything, but it did mean the incorporation of philosophy and medicine, libraries, sports stadia, and some Greek Hellenistic is another word for it, religious elements. And the Jews of Judea, when he got there, explained to him that there was no way they could worship Alexander as a god king, according to Egyptian prophecy and tradition, because of the strict Jewish monotheistic tradition. And Alexander respected their stand. In fact, his reign ended up going down in Jewish history as a fairly benevolent one. And then began the tradition that has prevailed into modern times of Alexander being a popular name for sons. When he died and his generals divided his empire up among them, Ptolemy took Egypt and also Judea, among other regions. And he continued Alexander's policy, as did his descendants, for a few generations. And this made for a largely peaceful time in Judea, but one with growing cultural tension, as more and more Jews were assimilated into Hellenistic culture. Some started spending a lot of their time in the agora, the market, talking about philosophy and questions of life and meaning. And they started spending a lot of time in the gymnasium, exercising, rather than up in the temple. Some went so far as to ignore important everyday rules of observant Jewish practice with their families and homes. After a time, a new high priest of Jerusalem was named, and this new high priest, Jason, was very much a champion of this Hellenization. And his appointment broke with tradition. He had essentially bought his appointment from the king. And that inflamed the Jews, who were alarmed at all these developments that were luring people away from Jewish ways. And as these tensions were simmering, something brought them to a head. The Syrian king, Antiochus IV, who was also a descendant of Alexander's generals, one of them, Antiochus I, decided he wanted Judea for himself. And so he went to war with the Ptolemies, and the Ptolemies lost, and Judea came under his sway, Antiochus IV. His reign was different. It was fairly brutal, and he had no tolerance or respect for Jewish ways, and he looted the temple, And he forced people to worship him as divine king in the temple. And he forced them to sacrifice pigs, which are, by Jewish tradition, a ritually unclean animal, which desecrated their temple. And he filled the country and the capital with troops to enforce his rule. Unsurprisingly, the people became desperate. And they did not agree about how to respond to their desperation. Three distinct groups had formed over time to meet the circumstances. One was the Hasidim, who felt that all this persecution and suffering were signs of God's displeasure because of all the assimilation that had been happening, that in some way this deserved punishment, and that the only right response was to endure and be more pious in the face of the persecution. This way, they thought they could earn back God's love and earn an eventual change in their circumstances. The Hasmoneans were angry, and they wanted to fight to reclaim their land and ways, and they argued that God helped those who helped themselves. The Pharisees were concerned with developing a better sense of laws and Bible interpretation that might show a new way to negotiate this terrible and complicated situation. These three groups argued with each other and did nothing else until finally the Hasmoneans, led by a man named Mattathias and his five sons, began to fight, first in a town called Modi'in, where Mattathias was the local Jewish priest. Inexplicably, the Hasmoneans won their first battle. And their victory against trained and veteran and very well-equipped troops seemed nothing short of miraculous. Indeed, it seemed God must be on their side. Otherwise, how could this have happened? And so their victory won many Jews, even many Hasidim, over to their side and swelled their ranks enough to allow them to begin a campaign to chase the Syrians out of Judea. And they did. They won the war. And they ritually cleansed and rededicated their temple. And they rekindled the sacred fire. And that is what the Hanukkah tradition of lighting candles actually celebrates, is the rededication of the temple. Sometimes people think that it's about a recasting of some pagan solstice tradition because of the time of year, or more popularly, that it commemorates the miraculous burning of an oil lamp. But that oil lamp story is from the Talmud. It's a rabbinic interpolation that came in much later. In fact, Hanukkah is the only Jewish holiday in the calendar that is rabbinically ordained rather than biblically ordained. It doesn't say, God said you shall celebrate these days in this way. The rabbis said that, because they felt it must have been a miracle, a huge miracle, and so warranted that degree of celebration. And it all occurred within recorded, written, human-scale history. So Hanukkah is not a legend. It's history. It really did happen. And the date Hanukkah is celebrated is the date the temple was rededicated over the course of those 8 days of ritual and celebration, beginning on the, what day? 25th of, oh, you were really listening to the song, Kislev. So, of course, history moved forward. Eventually, the Hasmoneans' descendants lost the respect and trust of the people, and things evolved into other events that we will talk about soon in this meeting house. But for now, the Hanukkah story echoes disturbingly in our modern ears, with the impact of jingoistic imperialism and the conflicts between people who cannot unite for the greater good, and the reactionary and violent responses to the changing times, and the perennial challenges of multiculturalism, and the familiar conflicted conjunction of the richness of tradition and the inevitability of change. One of the four ancient documents that tells the Hanukkah story is 4 Maccabees. There's four. 1 Maccabees, 2 Maccabees. 4 Maccabees was written just, they're very different, they're utterly unrelated documents, but they each tell the Hanukkah story, and they're each ancient. 4 Maccabees was written just a few hundred years after the rededication of the temple, which happened in about 160 BCE. And 4 Maccabees doesn't just tell the story, it uses the story as a lens for a lesson about the supremacy of religious rationality, pious rationality, over passion. Now, I'm going to read you the opening lines of 4 Maccabees. The subject that I am about to discuss is most philosophical. That is, whether devout reason is sovereign over the emotions. So it is right for me to advise you to pay earnest attention to philosophy. For the subject is essential to everyone who is seeking knowledge, and in addition, it includes the praise of the highest virtue. I mean, of course, rational judgment. So here's what I have to ask you. Does that sound Jewish? Does that sound like a faithful declaration of belief in the one true God and the faith and traditions of the Jewish people? Or does it sound like the introduction to a Socratic dialogue on a philosophical question about what is good and what is true? Oh, the irony. This treatise, written in the long wake of the revolt, when supposedly Jewish culture and belief triumphed over the Hellenizing influence of the Greeks. By its very form and nature, it contradicts the story that it tells. I look at the Hanukkah story from so far away and so long ago, and I see our own nation and people in it. I see our world in it. I see Jerusalem now as then, riven and suffering. And like the Jews in the time of the events of Hanukkah, we are divided about what to do in this world at this time that is so anguished and angry. Both progressives and conservatives, like the assimilated Jews, want to move with the dominant forces in society because of their undeniable potency and because we seek stability and comfort for our families and lives. We may differ as to what the dominant forces are, but the dynamic holds. And it's human and natural and eternal to feel that way. Both progressives and conservatives, like the Hasidim, want to focus on improving our own lives and ways so that they reflect what we believe in the hopes that our modeling better ways to live will be enough to move the world towards justice and safety. Both progressives and conservatives, like the Hasmoneans, want to fight and take action against what we see as the dominant forces, and compel the world into the shape that we believe in. And for some, violence is a legitimate path to that end. None of these are simple positions, and they look different depending on who inhabits them. And who defines what's dominant, and who says what's a better life, and who decrees what justice and safety look like. They are not stupid positions. They are not even inherently right or wrong. Only history and how they play out will generate our sense of their value and their morality. So what are we? Are we assimilated? Are we Hasidim? Are we Hasmoneans? Are we Pharisees? Are we Hellenists? Are we Syrians? Are we sideline observers? What are our choices? And which of them will we choose? Our present holds war and uncertainty and oppression and religious conflict and corruption and dysfunction in government and terrorism and racism and prejudice and schisms that tear at families and communities and nations, and Hanukkah tells us that almost none of this is new. Hanukkah's story is real, and so it is cause for caution. And it is cause for hope. Hanukkah acknowledges the reality of suffering, and still it affirms hope. It recognizes the terrible persistence of oppression, and still it affirms renewal. In the end, Hanukkah reminds us that it is truly possible for the miraculous and real transformative power of faith and courage and human endeavor together to overcome distrust and despair and face down autocrats. Remember, therefore, the eight lights of Hanukkah: faith, courage, striving unto sacrifice, loyalty, reconciliation, restoration, and celebration. Hold on to them, to the power to overcome the defiling of what is sacred, the power to create a new future with reconciliation and restoration at its core. Do you remember what that has felt like in the past? Reconciliation? Restoration? Do you remember what it feels like for your heart to open, and not just open, but overflow? Such opening and overflowing that people dance in the streets across all their differences in our nation's capital. I hope you remember that. I remember it. Hope and healing for our people and our nation will come if we stay in all the ways we need to, if we stay committed and courageous, especially now. So happy Hanukkah, and amen.